like she didn't actually see me, and she began to roll her earbuds around her iPod, turning her computer on. Stay calm, stay put, think it through. This is what you wanted. Fuck it. I didn't need to think. I pushed off my desk, blazing into the newsroom. Everybody was nose-deep in work because evidently we were on the verge of an environmental disaster, and nobody had time to be impressed that I had, in fact, gotten my head out of my ass. I knew now that for the last 3 days I'd tried to deny my feelings toward Jude and make them go away. I went directly to her table and slapped a hand over Kipling, which was opened by her keyboard. She looked up. Sir? There was nothing in that voice, nothing in her face. No fire crackling in the air between us. It was like she'd been turned off. Need you for a minute.
I'm right here.
Downstairs.
Not happening.
She said calmly. With everyone looking now, because that was the essence of Judith Humphrey, a goddamn badass in colorful chucks and a weird too-grown-up suit.
If you need something from me professionally, please say so right now, because I'm about to head into the conference room for an urgent call with NOAA's public affairs officer.
Only reason I didn't clench my jaw was because I knew that shit would snap and break from the force. If she'd been any other employee, I would have thrown her ass out of the building with the phone cord and receiver still clutched in her fist. But not Judith. Not after everything we'd been through. Truth of the matter was, I couldn't verbally rip her limb from limb, even when she belittled me in public, because I didn't want to, because I cared about her. I was in love with her. Jesus fucking Christ, I was, wasn't I? First she got into my bed, then under my skin, then into my heart. There was no deeper tissue than that, so she stayed there, taking more and more space until there was no room left inside me. If she cut me open, I would bleed her. She reared her head back like I was going to bite her face off.
Will that be all, Mr. Laurent?
Yes. Get on that NOAA call and report back. I took a step away, my head still spinning from the eternal revelation. I loved Jude. I'd pushed Jude away. I could have told her what had been happening at any point during those 3 days, but I didn't. I didn't want her to know. I'd wanted her to assume the worst and to give up on me like everyone else had. My mother was indifferent, my father actively hated me, and my ex-fiancé wanted me the same way you wanted a limited edition Hermes bag, because I'd look damn good and pricey on her arm.
Sure thing, sir.
Stop calling me sir. I snapped. My tongue has been inside your ass, for fuck's sake.
Yes, sir.
She hissed, narrowing her eyes at me. You came all over my face with my dick inside your mouth. Appreciate it, Chucks. In love, fuck me, with Judith Penelope Humphrey from Brooklyn, who I'd met on a shitty rainy day after another fight with my father, who had stolen my wallet and my cash and my condoms and my heart, who'd sneaked into every fiber of my skin, one layer at a time, with her music and contagious laugh and daily moods and dirty chucks. I was in love despite not wanting or agreeing to be, so I'd pushed her away. If I disappeared, I didn't have to make a decision. It would be made for me. A decision to take a chance on someone. A decision to live again. A decision to give up LBC and everything I'd worked for because power wasn't enough. Especially if you have no one to share it with. That's how I found myself doing the whole flowers and chocolate routine when I came to her house that evening. Did people do that anymore? Every romantic idea I had, and granted I didn't have many, was taken from stupid rom-coms Camille made me watch when I was a teen. Lily had never bothered. She knew sitting me down in front of a Kate Hudson movie was a task akin to getting me to fuck a food grinder. Maybe chocolate and flowers were a 90s thing. Judith was young, perhaps to a point it made people feel uncomfortable. Ask me if I gave a fuck. Say, Leon, do you give a fuck? Not even a half. Not even a quarter. Minus 3 fucks. And still counting. I rang the doorbell several times, pacing back and forth. The door remained unanswered, much like my text messages. I'd tried to keep them curt and sane, but those were two traits I'd parted ways with for the past few hours while dealing with an oil spill, a dying network, and a broken heart. I decided to shoot her one last message before I left. Say, Leon, we need to talk. Say, Leon, in a nutshell, I did not put my dick inside my ex-fiance. Say, Leon, and she is still very much an ex. Say, Leon, her grandmother died, we were close, I didn't want to lay out all the shit in a text message, which is fucking ironic because pick up the damn phone. Say, Leon, also if you did catch the party, that was her cousin, the family was obligated to go, I left early. Say, Leon, and alone. Say, Leon, why am I explaining myself to your message box? Let's make it awkward for both of us, I'm coming over. Say, Leon, open the door. Say, Leon, I'll kick it down. It's a dodgy neighborhood, Chucks. Going doorless for a night isn't ideal, but you asked for it. I heard the click of the door opening a second after the last text. I looked up. Chucks had on a Sonic Youth hoodie and short shorts. She stared at me through a crack, narrower than an ant's anus. Here, I said, thrusting the flowers, they looked about as wilted as me, and the red chocolate box with the pink cellophane in her direction. For your stubborn ass, which I would very much like to eat again in the near future.
Is this a joke?
She blinked slowly. I looked around me. Was it? Because it felt serious on an existential level to me. About the ass or the apology? Never mind. No, in both cases.
Well, I don't accept your apology, and I will not grace the ass comment with a response. Anything else?
She asked, but she was already pushing her door closed. I spotted her father shuffling behind her. He shook his head when he saw me through the slit in the door.
Celion, he scolded. You're lucky I'm too sick to kick your ass. Wait, I'd never be too sick to kick your ass.
Sir, I'm trying to explain. He walked off to the couch, not sparing me another look. I went back to staring at my girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, whatever she was. Fuck! There's a perfectly good explanation for everything that's happened in the last 3 days. I tried a different tactic. For the record, my BA was in pre-law and my master's was in international relations. I was supposed to be good with words. In fact, I knew I was. That did not stop me from shitting all over this encounter.
Yet there is zero way to explain why you went MIA and brushed me off when the entire world knew you were with your ex, she countered. You know, Celion, Milton was wrong about a lot of things. One thing he was right about, though, royalty and plebeians don't mix. It's probably very nice to be sitting there on the throne like you do.
Did it look like I was having a good fucking time? What gave it away, the fact that I felt like hell or smelled like it? My teeth ground together. She swung the door open all the way, parking a hand on her hip.
Actually, I do have something to say, so listen carefully. When my mother died, she said the heart was a lonely hunter. I thought she meant I was incapable of falling in love, because I never did. I liked Milton, a lot, and some guys in high school, too.
She trailed off. I was hoping she'd get to the point before I had to kill my way through half of New York. Especially Milton. That guy was so high on my shit list, I doubted it was safe for us to be in the same state.
But then I found out that's not what she meant. It was right before we left for Florida. That day, my father told me she was actually referring to a book. See, I'd never told him what Mom said. I didn't want to tarnish how perfect she was in his eyes. Because I love him. And when you love someone, you want to protect them, no matter the cost. And I can't afford to be with you, Celion, because I love you. But in order to learn how to love, you first need to learn how to live. And hating your parents, running around with your ex-fiancé, and playing power games is just not the way. I deserve more.
I would tell her I loved her right now if I thought she would believe me. But why would she? I'd acted like an ass for months. Fuck, I wouldn't believe me either.
Give me a chance.
She shook her head.
No can do.
Judith,
don't do this.
Her eyes pleaded. I said nothing to that.
You will only prove what I just said, that it's all about you. If you care about me at all, let me go.
Fuck, fuck, fuck! Hoping like hell it wasn't some test I was failing, I ran a hand through my hair, then slammed the chocolate and flowers against her corridor's wall. Pitted glossy cherries and chocolate smeared down the side of her door. And they say the French are romantic.
Okay,
I said. Okay. I found the habit of repeating oneself unappealing. But that was because I was never out of sorts and clueless. I was now, and I didn't like it one bit. Should we revisit this subject next week? Next month? Next year? Was I even going to survive that kind of time?
No, Celion. I don't think we should.
The door closed in my face, gently but firmly like everything else she did. I hung my head and shook it, staring at the floor. She had a Game of Thrones, hold the door, Matt. And I fucking let her go, because she did deserve more.
Chapter 21 Jude. The heart is a lonely hunter. My heart was a lonely hunter. Everything hurt. I'd always thought I was doomed by not being able to fall in love, but once I did fall, I wished I hadn't. Now it hurt when I breathed, when I walked the hallways at work, and each time in between, when I caught sight of the person with a sharp suit and even sharper tongue moving past me, firing orders at Brianna or bantering with Elijah and Kate. 8 weeks had passed. 4 weeks after he'd shown up at my doorstep with flowers and chocolate, Celian had invited everyone into the conference room and announced that he'd taken a position at a competing network in Los Angeles and would only be staying for another month. After he made that announcement, he'd shot me a look, searching my face. Whatever he found there made him ask me to stay after the meeting was over so we could talk about it. I'd wanted to, badly, but I knew nothing had changed. I wasn't going to move to Los Angeles, and we couldn't even make it work when we lived in the same city, so there was just no way we could pull it off if he lived across the country. Besides, I still loved him more than he was capable of ever loving me back, and an unbalanced relationship was a doomed one. "Sir, I have a lot of work. I'd really rather not." My fingers had twitched under the desk. His bottom-of-the-iceberg blue eyes had run down my body to see my shoes. I'd worn generic black flats. I couldn't bring myself to show him how I felt every day. It felt too intimate, now that he knew what each color meant. I'd also refused to unfold the little post-it notes he'd started shoving into my desk drawer about a month after everything blew up. It wasn't every day, but whenever I found one, my mood would turn sour. Even so, I knew he was not seeing Lily anymore, and that was official. The wedding venue had been canceled, Ava and Gray had reported to me excitedly one day. And after losing her beloved grandmother and her fiancé in the same month, Lily had decided to check into a Utah-based rehab center to treat her addiction to alcohol. Ava and Grayson were obsessed with my post-Celian life. They seemed to know every single detail I wasn't privy to, like how Milton had been fired from The Thinking Man and was now working as a researcher at some local newspaper nobody had heard of, or how Celian was packing his things and getting ready to move away. I couldn't bear the idea of not seeing Celian every day, but I also knew I didn't have it in me to be hurt by him again. Nevertheless, today, a Friday, when he served his last day at LBC, and everyone stood in line to shake his hand and thank him for what many considered a national service, I did too. He squeezed my hand. "Judith?" "Sir," I started to call him sir, knowing he hated it, before sparing both of us more headache. "Celia?" I shook my head, offering him a timid smile. "Thank you for everything."
"No need to thank me. It was only a fraction of what I was planning to give you anyway," he said dryly, but his eyes were two pools of misery. It felt like I was drowning into their depths, unable to come up for air. I shuffled a little to the side, making room for Jessica behind me. He squeezed my hand harder. "Read the notes, Judith."
"Safe travels." I ducked my head and went straight to the bathroom. Brianna waited for me there with two open mini-bottles of Jack Daniels. The burn of the alcohol barely touched my throat. It slid straight to my chest. Standing there, in the unsanitary women's bathroom, made me realize what having good friends was all about. And I was darn glad I'd made a good friend in Brianna. In the end, it was a Sunday afternoon when everything changed. When I changed. I realized it really didn't matter how Celian had treated me, because love was not a chess game. It was Twister. You got all wrapped up and stumbled over your own feet, but that was part of its charm. I had holed up in the library, as per usual. I knew Celian had been spending time with Dad every Sunday, religiously, and how it was important to both of them. Dad had Mrs. Hawthorne and me every day of the week, but he missed the buddies he'd once had at work, and Celian was his dose of testosterone. I tried not to be bitter about how easily and quickly he'd forgiven Celian, but the sad truth was, even I couldn't hate him. Not really. Not all the way. Not the way I so desperately wanted to hate the man who'd quite ironically made me realize I could love. Phoenix found me at the library. He was the one to sneak us in some candy this time. He looked perky and mischievous today, and better than he had the last few weeks. He seemed like the guy I'd met the first time when he'd approached me at this very library. "What's with you? You look different," I stole a handful of Sour Patch Kids from his bag. He chewed on his candy as he began to flip through the pages of the Times.
Different how?
Hmm. I looked left and right, feeling uncomfortable. Happy?
I am happy, he laughed. It's not a foreign concept. You should try it, too.
Maybe it's contagious and I'll catch it from you, I mused. But that was wishful thinking, and I knew it. I was operating on autopilot, going through the motions, when really all I could think about was the fact that Celion was probably in my apartment right now. And possibly for the last time. Leaving his scent and testosterone and sexy air all over the place. Ugh. Actually, I'm also pretty happy because I have a lead to give you. Phoenix snapped the paper shut, his eyes zeroing in on mine. I closed my copy of The New Yorker and arched an eyebrow. He leaned across the table between us and squeezed my hand.
I think you're going to appreciate this one.
Then why are you giving it to me? I'd been here for Phoenix since he'd gotten back from Syria. I'd refused to take Sirion's side and choose between them, even though many women probably would have. But that still didn't warrant all the help he'd given me. I knew he was a freelancer, and he didn't particularly need the money, but I was beginning to feel uncomfortable at how much I owed him in leads and sources. Part of the reason I'd become appreciated and adored in the newsroom was because he'd handed me a lot of gems that should have been his.
This one has your name all over it, he insisted.
Why? I asked. No matter what Celion said, Phoenix was a good journalist. He had friends everywhere. He was charming and approachable. Since he'd gotten back to New York, he'd spent every evening hitting the trendy Manhattan bars where journalists swarmed, and had made more contacts, even though he didn't drink a drop of alcohol. He knew everyone and everything, his father's son through and through. And James Townley? I was pretty certain he had a direct line to Jesus himself.
Jesus, I was wondering when you were going to give me a comeback.
Because, Phoenix said, snapping a purple Sour Patch in half between his teeth and flashing me a smirk.
It literally does have your name on it. Now, do you promise not to freak the hell out when I show you what my father found?
Your father? My eyes widened. James Townley did some actual journalistic work? I didn't mean to be rude or anything, but I figured he didn't need to, seeing as he was a news god. Phoenix waggled his brows.
Let's just say he had some open business with the person in question, so when he overheard this hot piece of gossip, he was eager to dig up the bone at the end of that hole.
Turned out, the bone was meaty. Okay, my teeth sank to my lower lip. Tell me. He did. Everything. Then he slid a file across the table. I shoved it in my backpack and bolted to the train station. I had to show it to Celion, and I knew exactly where to find him. Or maybe I didn't. Our apartment was empty when I got to it. I climbed up to Mrs. Hawthorne's place, but she said Celion and my dad had left in a cab a couple hours before. She asked if I wanted to come in for tea. I told her I did, but not right now, and I could see the disappointment in her face. I pulled the sleeve of her dress and hugged her on her threshold without warning. She yelped at the sudden gesture, but eased into the hug after a second. She patted my back.
I would like to get to know you better, Jude. I see how well you take care of your father, and I admire that a lot.
We will, I promised, and I meant it, even though my mind was elsewhere, with the hot news I wanted to deliver. I promise, I don't take all you do for Dad for granted either. We will spend some time together. I know we will. I then took the stairs three at a time, hitting the call button frantically. Celion's phone went straight to voicemail. I would have thought the worst if I didn't know he was with my dad.
Dad. Oh, God. Dad.
I threw my backpack on the floor and started calling my father. He'd seemed okay before I left the house. He seemed okay in general. They said the tumor was shrinking, but how promising was it? It was an experimental treatment, and he was still weak. He never left the building, ever. Now he was out with Celion, God knows where, and I was supposed to do what, exactly? sit around and wait for his safe return? I started sending him and Celion messages simultaneously. For Dad, it was the usual, call me back, I'm worried, you should have left a note, when are you coming back? With Celion, however, I allowed myself to be more creative. Maybe it was the pent-up anger I'd harbored for the past 8 weeks that did it. Jude, where's my dad? Jude, I'm going to kill you, Celion. Jude, not literally in case this message finds its way to the authorities. Jude, I'm so worried. Please have him call me. Jude, where did you take him? Why? You know he never leaves the house. I paced the apartment, back and forth. I didn't know what to do with myself, and that scared me to death. I went back to my backpack and pulled out the documents Phoenix had given me, examining them with shaky hands. Kipling slipped from my bag and spilled open, spitting out business cards and the folded post-it notes Celion had left me like confetti. I'd taken them out of the drawer before I'd left the office Friday because they were overflowing and I didn't have space for my own stuff. Why didn't I just recycle them? Why did he send them? I'd asked myself this question a million times. Why did Celion try to reach out to me with notes? He was the most verbal person I knew, and he seemed to have a magnetic power over me every time we were together. But maybe that was it. He didn't want to have a magnetic power over me. He wanted us to talk. Or just to tell me how he felt. Now, as I waited for him or my dad to answer me, I had no choice but to try to distract myself by finding out what the note said. I sank to the floor, my back dragging along the wall, and unfolded the first yellow note. The word music comes from the Muses, goddesses of the arts in Greek mythology. I never said it before, because I thought it was tacky. But you're my goddess, especially your ass. Celion. John Lennon started his music career as a choir boy. I never said it before because it terrified me to admit it, but you're my church, although I plan to be inside you way more than just on Sundays. Celion. Your heart mimics the beat of the music you're listening to. I didn't know I even had one before you came along, and now I do, and it hurts like a motherfucker. Thanks for that. Celion. I stole your iPod before you stole my wallet. It was tucked inside my jacket before I even removed your panties. I wanted to know what you were listening to. And I was sorely disappointed there were no Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake songs in sight, because it made not falling for you so much fucking harder. Celion. I tried to tell myself I broke up with Lily because I was better than my father. Bullshit. I broke up with her because I couldn't not be with you. And I've spent a respectable amount of time denying that shit to myself. Celion. The day I went to the Davises, I wanted you to find out. I wanted you to show me your ugly side. I wanted you to be ugly for once in your life so I could shake you off. You weren't ugly that day. I was. Celion. The last one, which was actually many post-it notes stuck together, had been tucked inside my drawer on Friday, and it read, I'm in love with you. And I might not be able to tell you that in person because you clearly don't want to hear it and because I'll be gone soon. But I am, and I fucking hate it. Don't think for 1 minute I wanted to fall in love with you, Jude. But that makes my love for you so much stronger. So next time you wrongly assume you're the only person hurting in this, just remember the first rule of journalism. There are two sides to every story. And if you're at all open to hearing mine, this is probably my last chance. Celion. The lock rattled in the door to the apartment. I quickly wiped the tears from my face, but there was very little point in doing that, I realized. My clothes were soaked with them. So were the post-it notes. I gulped in a breath and turned around. Dad walked in wearing a Yankees cap and waving a baseball in his hand.
Guess what your old man caught?
His grin collapsed the minute he saw me sitting on the floor surrounded by a sea of yellow papers. He rushed to my side.
Is everything okay, Jojo?
I stood up, not wanting to waste another minute. Where were you?
The Yankees game.
Celion thought it'd be a nice way to say goodbye. Then we went for hot dogs. I figured I'd be home before you got back. I cut my library time short. Where's Celian?
I sniffed. Are you okay?
He asked again, rubbing my back. Was I? A part of me was. A part of me was more than okay, knowing I was about to help a man who deserved my help more than anyone I knew, after everything he'd given me and my dad. Another part of me was gutted and torn, to give him a chance and to risk the full demolition of my heart, or try to move on. I'm fine, Dad. Where's Celian?
He said he had to get something from the office.
Of course. I was out the door before I had a chance to hear what it was.
Chapter 22. Celian. The cardboard boxes remained untouched and empty in the corner of my office. All I really needed to take was my laptop. I rarely got attached to people, let alone possessions. I had no pictures of my family and no bullshit funny mugs on my desk. Every award I'd received had been thrown in the trash the night it was given to me. I didn't make the news to get a pat on the back. I made the news because I wanted to change lives, and perspective, and the world, and to prove I was deserving of all I had been given. The only thing I had gotten attached to on this floor would like to see me castrated by a butcher, so there was really no need to prolong my departure. I'd insisted on not having a goodbye party, explaining there was nothing happy about my exit. I wasn't moving on to bigger, better things after a mutual understanding with the management. I was jumping out of a sinking ship, leaving my staff to drown. It was like planning your own funeral. I shut my laptop and shoved it into the trash with the heel of my Oxford, deciding I didn't want to take anything with me from this place. Fuck it. CSP, a competing channel, was building a news division in Los Angeles, and it seemed like a good idea to put a few thousand miles between me and Matias. But that wasn't why I'd quit my job. I didn't want to see Judith's face every day, knowing I'd put the scowl there. So I made way for her because I would never fire her, and because really she'd earned her place in my newsroom perhaps even more than I had. There hadn't been a huge breakdown to complement my heartbreak. It was quiet, yet somehow 1,000 times worse than I'd ever experienced. Every day when she left the office, she took something with her. Another piece of my fucking heart. Another song on her playlist I'd never be able to listen to without thinking of her. I'd had my phone off all day. I wanted to do this without interruption. And I finally turned it back on and shoved it in my pocket. I grabbed my jacket, throwing one last look at the place that had once been my kingdom, the place I thought I'd have my fucking retirement party, and shook my head. I turned around, closed the door, and bumped into something small and hot. Judith. She shoved a file to my chest, pointing at me.
First things first, next time you take my father out of the house, you let me know by text or a phone call. Agreed?
I blinked rapidly. Was I imagining things now? Because that kind of shit needed to be checked and medicated. I arched an eyebrow. You do realize Los Angeles is not around the block, right? I won't be seeing much of him anytime soon. Still an asshole. But hell if she didn't like it.
There's a special place in hell for you.
She shoved her delicate finger in my face. Would it be too much if I bit the tip? Probably. I smirked. Not surprised. I have a rock star realtor. What are you doing here on a Sunday, Chucks?
Saving your ass?
She unplastered the file from my chest and walked over to her station in the newsroom. I followed. Her ass looked fantastic as always, but that wasn't what made me smile until I'd almost cut my face in half. She laid all the docs on her desk yet wouldn't let me peek into the file. I eyed her curiously, not sure what her deal was, but intrigued nonetheless. More than anything, I liked that she was talking to me again and wasn't planning on fucking it up.
Prepare to have your mind blown,
she said. Is this an invitation for a hookup? Because I find it hard to believe anything but your cunt can evoke such, or any, emotion in me. I left the romantic stuff for the notes I'd written her. I still couldn't bring myself to say any of it out loud, but I wanted to. Badly. She shook her head and smiled, sliding Polaroid pictures my way. Of my father dining at a restaurant with the channel's bigwigs. I raised an eyebrow. How did you get those?
James Townley.
And how did he get those?
He hired Dan, who works here, to run an investigation on Matias.
So did I. I shot back. So? She shrugged.
Townley paid double.
That fucker Dan. I sucked in a breath. Jude put her hand on mine and squeezed.
Not at all. He's brilliant. He took you both as clients because you had the same goal, bring Matias down.
I leaned my hip against her desk and browsed through the images.
There were more in her file, but this wouldn't cut it. That's all nice and dandy, but what the fuck am I looking at? My father having lunch with the investors without me? I can use it for nothing other than maybe research for making voodoo dolls. Jude slid a bunch of documents from the file toward me.
Read the highlighted areas. There's a lot of fluff, profanity, and chauvinism to weed through, but in the end, you'll find the conversation quite interesting. Especially the revelations in this transcript of the original recording.
This is all recorded? I picked up the papers, eyeing her. She nodded.
Yes.
I still won't be able to use it in court. I was testing her, treading carefully over my own secret. A secret I didn't want to make known yet so Judith wouldn't feel pressured into anything. My heart beat so fast I thought it was going to burn a hole in my chest. She waved her hand in the document's direction.
Just read it, Celion.
I started skimming through the text, hitting the highlighted parts. ML. Ridiculously easy. I knew he was there, so I pulled out the CCTV footage and found the girl. Judith something. I made sure the right arrangements had been made, and sure enough, the Judith girl got called for a job interview at LBC, although there was a mix-up, and she somehow ended up in another department. I rectified the situation right away, though. ML. It was a long shot, but my son is not as calculating as I am. I figured it was worth a try. And it worked. He got attached so easily and discarded his fiancé completely. Now we need to decide what we're doing with LBC. ML. I'm pulling out the ad slowly, though we will need to think of ways to terminate the contract completely. My lawyers are working on finding a legal loophole. I set the papers down, sitting on the edge of her desk and lacing my fingers nonchalantly. So Matthias had planned it all along. My meeting Jude, my falling in love with her, giving up on the Davis family. Every single thing. And I'd walked right into his trap. Well, almost. I didn't make the mistake of asking Jude if she'd known about it. Of course she hadn't. Instead, I focused on how to deal with this shit. We've both been set up, I said. She put a hand on my shoulder, and I resisted the urge to pull her into me and bury my face in her hair. Judith had this touch that made shit go away. Bad shit. She must have known I thought it. Maybe I even said it out loud, because she took a few steps back and swallowed. It was the kind of swallow that said there was something more, and I wasn't necessarily going to like it.
I read the post-it notes, she said.
I thought you did a long time ago. It felt good, knowing she hadn't chosen to ignore me. She shook her head.
It hurt too much.
And now?
It still does, but a little less. Also, I'm more concerned with your well-being than my own right now. James wants to talk to you.
I immediately wanted to say I wasn't interested, but I knew better than to fuck it all up. She was talking to me, after all. I needed to play nice if I wanted a nice girlfriend. Fuck. Yes, that's what it was. I wanted Jude to be my girlfriend, not a fake one and not a temporary one. I'm pressed for time, I said instead, wondering if it were still true now that she and I were on speaking terms again. But I guess I could squeeze him in tonight if you come with.
This is your family and personal business. I don't think I belong.
I don't think I give a fuck. Wait, this just in. I pretended to listen to something on an invisible headphone. I don't give a fuck. Grab your shit, Chucks.
This doesn't mean anything, she said as I tugged on her hand.
Like hell it didn't. She wanted to help me and she'd come all the way to work on a Sunday afternoon to give me something she thought would be useful. It meant everything and more, and I was going to milk the hell out of it. I made a stop in my office and took the laptop out of the trash can, putting it neatly back on the desk. Jude never asked what it had been doing there in the first place. She knew. I'd never been to James Townley's place, and I'd been content to think I never would. He lived in another penthouse, in another New York scraper, and it was amazing how one of the most dazzling architectural cities in the world had managed to be home to so many identical, clinical, and impersonal penthouses. James opened the door in a robe, douchebag, and said he was glad to see me. When he spotted Jude next to me, he made a face like I'd pissed in his drink. Deal with it, I replied to his nonverbal annoyance, walking into his living room. His 12-year-old wife, who was 85% made of plastic, unglued herself from the couch, her heels click-clicking toward their hallway. And then I guessed their bedroom. James went to the kitchen to get us some drinks. I couldn't figure out why his wife would wear heels at home. I elbowed Judith lightly as we sat down on the same sofa the busty morning show host had vacated a second ago. Do you wear shoes indoors? Jude's eyes darted to me and she frowned immediately.
I don't even wear underwear and a bra at home. Dad's lucky if my clothes cover my private parts. I'm a free spirit.
I fucking love you, I blurted, and I nearly choked on the air inside my lungs. Not that she didn't know by now, but still. She grinned.
I think I'm beginning to believe you.
Let the record show that I took another job just so you could keep yours at LBC, I told her before my throat closed. Being away from you would feel like living without limbs, and I very much enjoy my limbs. The look on her face was priceless. It was every fantastic Christmas gift a second after you unwrap it. I was about to dive down and go for the kiss, sealing this shit for good, when James sauntered back in with a tray and something alcoholic on it. Fucker. I couldn't pretend I didn't see him, so I straightened up on the couch and tried to think about sad things, like global warming and the Big Bang Theory, to take care of my inappropriately engorged cock. James dragged over a settee and sat directly in front of me, leaning forward. The silver tray with the drinks sat between us on the coffee table, but nobody touched it. Are you sure you'd like Junior to be here? What I'm about to tell you is very personal. Stop calling her Junior, and yes, she can be here. My life is her life. They both stilled in their seats, but I didn't miss a heartbeat. I had a flight out of JFK to LAX in 5 hours, and I wasn't going to be on it. That made me feel eerily calm and happy. Judith was here. Everything was okay. Well, James shook his head, running his hand through his hair. He was so vain, I wondered if he shaved his balls completely or bleached them to match his fake hair color. There's no right way of saying this. Let me tell you for the record that I've been wanting to tell you for a while now, but Iris always stopped me. Never Matias, though, son. I'm not scared of him. Stop calling me I started, but he cut me off. But you are, he said, clearing his throat and blinking rapidly. You're my son, Celion, and there's nothing and no one that can change that. 33 years ago, I walked into the bar across from LBC after a bad job interview. No. I couldn't listen to this crap. I definitely couldn't bear hearing how similar it was to my story with Judith so far. I shook my head without even meaning to, and I felt myself standing up, legs on autopilot. I hated my father, but I refused to believe I'd been a fool for 32 years. A small, hot hand, a little sweaty but in a good way, tugged me back down.
Please,
she whispered.
I know it's hard.
I found myself sitting again, even though every bone in my body screamed for me to do something different. This wasn't for this asshole. It was for Judith. Continue, I hissed. James looked at me with eyes full of pity and regret, two feelings I despised, especially from a man I'd known as my employee for the past few years, no matter how much power he had in my newsroom. I wanted to become an actor, he said. It was actually an audition, rather than a job interview, and I failed. 3 drinks later, your mother and I were in bed. I didn't know she was a newlywed, but that's not the only thing she chose to omit from the equation. I would learn weeks later that this had been the day she first found out your father was cheating on her, which was why she had no ring on. She thought she'd never put it back on. Fuck my life. The similarities were endless, uncanny. And yet I couldn't help but pray to God that the outcome of our relationships would be very different, because as far as my knowledge went, my mother and James spoke to each other once a year during the annual network Christmas party and nothing more. Jude's hand reached for mine. Not tentatively, no. This time she owned it, giving it a squeeze. You were married too, I spat. Phoenix was only 3 years younger than me. James shook his head.
No, I met my ex-wife the following fall.
Phoenix and I were half-brothers. I wanted to throw up. My girlfriend rubbed my thigh now, trying to soothe me. James hurried to pour us all a drink, I think just to do something with his hands. The air wrapped around us in an awkward way, and maybe that's what having a heart attack felt like. After the one-night stand, I told her about my audition. She said there was a vacancy at LBC, they needed someone for their morning show, to host a daily 10-minute slot with the news. Nothing prime time, but I knew it could pay the bills, and let me guess. I cut him off. You needed the money because one of your family members was sick. James's face twisted in shock, his entire expression opening up, unlocking like a safe. My mother needed surgery on her hip. How did you know? Judith and I exchanged looks. Atonement. I was hers and she was mine. She thought she could never love. I thought I didn't deserve love, and even if I did, I'd never find anyone half tolerable to spark this feeling in me.
Just a wild guess. I rubbed my hand over my face. Judith bit on her lower lip and my dick jerked to attention again. Really? Right now? James looked between the two of us. I went in the next day and got the job. I couldn't believe my luck. I found out not long after that your mother was married, and she acted like I didn't even exist anymore, which in retrospect I don't exactly fault her for. She was in a very vulnerable state. I wasn't Matthias's son. All this time I'd thought I was inherently an asshole because of him, but really, I was more of a sociopathic prick like Maman. The similarities were uncanny, much to my dismay. When did you find out about me? I cut off his fluff talk. I hadn't come here to hear about his journey as a junior anchor at LBC. James reached for his drink and gulped it in one go, shaking his head and slamming the glass against the silver tray. He wiped his mouth with the sleeve of his robe. Your mother came to me about 10 weeks after. She knew it was mine because she and Matthias weren't. He shook his head. He'd cheated on her. She hadn't wanted to be with him. I appreciated him not talking explicitly about anyone fucking Maman. That was one mental image I was happy to keep out of my brain. I told her I'd love to be a part of your life. I want you to know that not having you was never an option for either of us. But at the same time, your mother had decided to give her relationship with Matthias another shot, and she knew they could never explain such an arrangement to the press. So Matthias knows. I nearly laughed, though there was nothing funny about my situation. I was sitting in front of my biological father, a man I'd known all my life and hated for a decade as I'd worked side by side with him for most of my adult years. He'd always called me son, and I'd always berated him for it. He'd tried to get close to me, and I'd repeatedly shut him down. He'd tried to talk to me, but I'd kept sending him on his way. James bowed his head. He knows. We were frank with him from the beginning. He was livid, of course, tried to get me fired, but by then I had gained some momentum and LBC was still working its way up. They needed me and I needed them. But yes, Matthias knew about you. That's why he could never stomach your presence. I smiled bitterly, though there was something liberating in knowing it wasn't personal. It wasn't specifically something I'd done. I'd grown up thinking I was so rotten I'd become rotten. This changed everything. Mostly it changed how I looked at myself in the mirror. Judith snuggled beside me, rubbing my arm. Matthias's approach to you has always been the center of my beef with him. Every Christmas at our network party, I would beg your mother to tell you about me. And every single Christmas, the layer of security and fake friends patting her and blocking my way grew thicker. I couldn't tell you this of my own accord, but I watched you grow from afar. And every night when I tucked Phoenix into bed, I prayed that one day I'd be able to make up for it with you. I couldn't really articulate a response to that. I got why James hadn't been able to tell me he was my father. At the same time, I thought he was probably exaggerating the level of remorse he'd experienced. He was still newly married to a woman half his age and had dumped his previous wife because he'd wanted to go on a celebrity Big Brother-like adventure. Still, James was self-absorbed and egotistical, but he wasn't a goddamn bastard like Matthias. I blinked at him, checking my watch. Safe to say it's too late for you to tuck me into bed. You realize I'm going straight to my mother with this, correct? My loyalty was to no one but Judith and myself at this point, and it didn't escape me that I'd just put Jude's name before my own. James rubbed his face. She can't hurt me more than the hidden truth did. Too fucking shay. I jerked my chin toward him. You hired Dan. Tell me everything about how this came to be. James didn't spare one detail. He said he'd had a feeling Matthias was beginning to shit on our quality in a bid to damage the network a second before he disappeared off the radar. He needed to tend to his health, and he seemed to know he didn't have much longer on the president throne. Hoping to counteract this, James had had the same feeling I did, that Dan was motivated by money and could be a good free agent. James also confessed that with Phoenix back in town and my engagement crumbling, he wanted to make sure I was protected against Matthias. Precisely, I said. But all the shit Dan discovered still doesn't cover my ass against Matthias. You gave me nothing but hearsay. James's eyes darkened, and he suddenly looked much older than his days. We can let others do the job for us. Just send it to the different networks, he suggested. Let the problem fix itself. He'll have to step down. I appreciated it, him trying to help me out. But there was no need. I shook my head. LBC would take an even greater hit if we do that.
But we can't just let Matthias get away with it.
Jude squeezed my hand, a sweet gesture from my greatest sin. I turned toward her, a smirk maneuvering its way across my face. We won't. Chapter 23. Celion. Then I became homeless. I'd terminated my lease effective Sunday, the day I was supposed to fly out to Los Angeles. Only it was technically Monday morning now, and I was nowhere near the West Coast. That meant I had to spend the night somewhere, and fortunately that place was Judith's Brooklyn apartment. To my cock's disappointment, I slept on the couch. But it was still better than sleeping in a million-star hotel or at the Laurent Towers, which I couldn't even look at after I'd learned what I had about Matthias not being my father. I wasn't the one who'd cheated on him, yet I was the one who'd taken most of his wrath. In the morning, Judith made her father a shake from what looked like sewer water, puke, and misery, and slid a bowl of cereal my way. It wasn't even a brand. It was poured right out of a 6-pound industrial box with a Costco logo. Cavities and diabetes. Breakfast of champions. I muttered into the bowl as I took a spoonful.
My apologies. Our room service doesn't work on Mondays.
Jude took a seat next to her dad and patted his veiny hand. I fucking loved this girl. What she lacked in fun, she made up for with love. That's fine. I waved her off. I can be in charge of breakfast when we move in together. Utensils clattered on plates and Rob's eyes ping-ponged between us. There was a lot of amusement in them. Jude studied me, trying to gauge whether I was kidding or not. I wasn't.
I'm not a breakfast person, she said. And yes, I know it's the most important meal of the day.
My eyes slid down her midriff and stopped where the table covered her. I smiled. No, it isn't.
You're awful.
She hid her smile behind her coffee mug. And you're going to let me pick your chucks today, I retorted. Robert laughed. Can you hear it?
Hear what?
Her cheeks were doing this hamster thing where she stifled a laugh and looked too cute doing so. It was sickening, really, how I felt about her. I would find the word embarrassing fitting if I didn't own up to that shit. Your chest's humming. You're happy, kids. Rob took a sip of his shake, grimacing. The happiest you've ever been. A little while later, we took the train to work, both staring at her dove-white chucks. My pick. I wanted a clean slate, a fresh start.
You know, you can still take the job in Los Angeles.
She flipped Kipling absent-mindedly, staring at it as she spoke.
LBC is falling apart and I don't expect these revelations to change your commitment to your new job.
My only commitment is to the company I need to inherit, and to the only girl who's capable of calling me out on my bullshit. Not in that order. She looked up.
And who would that be?
I twisted the collar of her shirt into a ball and jerked her to me in a kiss, not giving a fuck that everybody was watching. Or that we were standing up, clasped between dozens of sweaty, exasperated people starting their Monday, not caring about anything but her. Our lips touched and my cock was a second away from shouting hallelujah. Her mouth was soft and warm and mine, and her body melted against my own in a way that could only mean one thing. It was back on. And this time, I wasn't going to let go. Celion? Blue, aka my so-called replacement as news director, scratched his curly, dandruff-ridden hair. He was standing in my office, shuffling full boxes from side to side. I breezed right in, carrying my Starbucks and throwing 2 pieces of mint gum into my mouth. With all due respect, and let's admit it, I didn't have a whole lot of it for him. The guy was a former associate producer at a cable news channel in Nebraska. I didn't owe him more than a brief explanation. Sharp on a Monday morning, I liked that, Blue, and I got the fuck out of my office. I dumped my leather briefcase under my desk and powered up my laptop. Brianna came running from the hallway, panting out my name.
Sir, Celion, sir, what are you doing here?
Poor thing thought she'd gotten rid of me. I tisked. I decided to go easy on her since I was going to have to be a little more tolerable for Jude's sake, especially after my so-called dumping of her so publicly. Brianna, good morning. Feel free to drop my items at the usual dry cleaners. You can use the wait time to chill. I hated that word, but it needed to be said. I also still hated doing my own dry cleaning, and I really did think Brianna could use a little downtime. But you can no longer drink on shift unless you want your ass thrown into rehab.
Rehab?
She wheezed. I motioned with my hand, drinking from an invisible small bottle of liquor. She nodded and bowed her head.
Yes, sir.
Blue and I were left alone in the room again. I crossed my ankles atop the desk, leaning back. Well, Blue, there's good news and bad news. Which would you like me to break first? The middle-aged, beer-bellied man in front of me looked down at his shoes, his chest quivering with an uneven breath.
Bad news?
The bad news is you will not be taking my position, not in the next few months anyway.
And the good news is that you still get a job, if you want it. And you know what the great news is? He looked up, and hell, the smile on his face told me he was on board. That finally things were falling into place for me. What? He asked. The news I am going to make in this newsroom today. I'd expected Matias to blaze onto the floor and make a spectacle out of the situation. The fact that he remained silent suggested he was strategizing about how to tackle the bane of his existence, aka yours truly. I gave him his time because I actually had work to do. The LA people were crushed to hear I wasn't joining them, but I invited them to send their staff to New York and promised to train their new employees. Judith ran from place to place around the newsroom, her cheeks flushed. Kate, Jessica, and Elijah seemed glad I hadn't left, and Brianna smiled guiltily and waved her hand every time I shifted my eyes to make sure she wasn't reaching for her top drawer to take a mini bottle out. 5 hours into our workday, while I was knee-deep in something in the newsroom, I got a phone call from the 60th floor.
It's your father.
Brianna came as close as she could, holding the corded phone in her hand. No, it is not, and thank fuck for that. He hadn't even called my cell. Instead, he was making a whole fucking show about it like I knew he would.
He wants to speak to you,
she said. He knows where to find me.
He's asking if you can come up to his office.
I can't, but he can come down, or not. Giving a shit is not on my agenda today.
He said he'll call security.
Brianna's face was so red for a moment I worried she might explode. Tell him that's a very good idea. I've been thinking about getting rid of his ass for a long time now. The room fell quiet, everybody staring at me. I nodded my chin to the phone. Tell him that, Brianna. You're just following my orders, word for word, please. She repeated my message to my father, wincing the entire time. Jude appeared at my side, squeezing my biceps and looking up at me with a smile. I pulled her into a hug and kissed her forehead. I had a lot of damage control to do when it came to the way people perceived us as a couple in this place. When Brianna ended the call, there was a pause, after which the entire newsroom erupted with a lengthy standing ovation. She laughed. I smirked. When I turned around to walk back to my office, Matias was standing at the door waiting for me. Next to him stood my mother, fresh off her private plane, judging by her casual clothes. Her eyes were horrified. I knew mine were dead.
Showtime.
Can I offer you anything? Bourbon, whiskey, water, perhaps a lie detector? I motioned to the minibar in my office, my smile casual and charming, the way they'd taught me at the Swiss summer school my parents had dumped me in every year. My mother seated herself on the couch in front of my desk, staring at her hands in her lap, and Matias paced, pulling at his ear in a nervous tick. I was the only person in the room whose heart didn't seem to be beating a mile a minute, and that's because I knew something they didn't.
I'm so mad at James for telling you,
my mother muttered.
I was only trying to protect you, Celia. Think about the way it would have been perceived in our circle, in any circle, really. You'd have been a bastard. Your blood is blue. You are a Laurent.
My blood is red, and being a bastard is better than being his son. I walked over to the front of my desk and leaned against it.
Listen, Celia.
Matias raised a hand. Not even a word, Matias, I warned, arching a brow. Not even one.
I don't know what you think you have on me.
Oh, I think you do. That's why you're shitting your pants as we speak.
You can't use it in court. Dan was not supposed to record those private conversations.
Matias stressed, his left eye ticking. He had a point. After I'd left James's apartment last night, he'd emailed Iris and Matias a file with the recording, along with a brief note about how he'd come clean to me. Ignoring his words, I threw Matias a pointed look. You will drop the ads, terminate the dodgy contracts, and hire back every single person you have fired from my team by the end of the day. And if any of them are unavailable, you will find me a top-notch replacement. If I were you, I'd start working right now. Work is a foreign concept, so it will take you time to get the gist of it. Matias laughed.
What makes you think I will do anything for you? Nothing has changed, other than the fact that you now know why I couldn't stand your face from day one. You weren't mine. Your mother messed up. The only good things about my marriage to her were LBC and Camille. And you took them from me, too.
My mother darted up from the couch, walked over to him, and slapped his face hard. I watched them, emotionless. What a fucking mess. Surely I could dump some of the responsibility for me being a heartless prick on the fact that these two clowns had raised me. Matias stared at her, dumbfounded, and rubbed his red cheek. He narrowed his eyes. He was about to raise his hand to her, but thought better of it once I stepped between them and shook my head. I will fuck up your face so hard. You will have 6 new holes to sneeze from, I said dryly. He took a step back, clearing his throat and fixing his gaze back on her.
You always loved him more than Camille.
You always treated him like he was garbage,
she countered.
And what happened to Camille was your fault, not his. You lied to me because you wanted to isolate him from his family.
And you were the ignorant little thing who was too busy chasing fitness trainers to go to your son and ask him yourself.
Matthias smirked, cocking his head with a devilish glint in his eyes. He was right, and she knew it. I had visited my mother many times after what happened to Camille, but we never shared an actual meal, let alone a conversation. I'd tried, and every Sunday night as I'd made my way back from JFK to my apartment, I'd wondered why I'd done that to myself in the first place.
Now he's buried with the Brooklyn girl, and he has to wait until I drop dead before he takes over.
Matthias waved a hand in my direction. Thanks for bringing her here, by the way, I interjected, clucking my tongue in approval. She was the answer and the solution.
Huh?
He spun on his heel, staring me down. I took sick pleasure in slowly pouring myself a glass of something I was never going to drink, whistling and thinking about white chucks, of all fucking things in the world, and how damn good they were going to look with a white wedding gown, or better yet, without anything else at fucking all. Everything turned out for the best, I explained. I met Judith, and we found something you two miserable assholes will never have. I swirled the liquid in my glass, looking up and saluting my parents. My mother looked on the verge of fainting, and despite everything, I still had sympathy for her. And I get to keep LBC, I added.
How so? Matthias parked his hands on his waist, scowling.
A vein in his neck began to pump visibly. I traced my finger over the rim of the glass, staring at it intently as I answered him. I was worried I was going to get a hard-on simply from seeing him crumble if I looked up. Life works in mysterious ways. When Lily came here a couple months ago and told me Madeline had died, I was crushed. I rushed to the Davis's house and spent time with them. You probably weren't aware, but I had a very close relationship with Madeline. I craved human contact, something I didn't have in spades at home. I rubbed my jaw. So imagine my surprise when they called me a few weeks after her passing to confirm that she had left her granddaughters with millions and millions of dollars and the estate, and little old me with her 10% of LBC. I didn't tell them about the letter Madeline had also left me. It was more of a note, really, but it brought my situation with Judith into a sharp relief.
With business out of the way, it's time to listen to your heart. Don't lock my granddaughter in a loveless marriage. Don't lock my favorite boy inside one either. It's a miserable place to be. I've been there with Lily's grandfather, and I never want my loved ones to pay this place a visit. Make me proud. Love, Madeline.
I watched in my periphery as their eyes widened and reality set in. My mother was guilt-stricken, and on my side, with 55% of the shares of LBC, I had 10 additional ones. I could now throw any decision Matthias had made easily.
No,
Matthias said, stumbling backward and collapsing onto the sofa. Yup, I confirmed, popping the pee for good measure. You've gotten everything you ever wanted by walking over people and making a fucking mess, Matthias. While I managed to save my company by forming a genuine relationship with an elderly, somewhat lonely woman who just needed someone to be there for her. Karma is a bitch, and I do believe she just justified her reputation by shoving a 10-foot pole up your ass. My mother galloped in my direction, throwing her arms around my neck. I let her, not because I wasn't mad at her, not because I wasn't livid, and not because I thought her behavior was remotely acceptable. No. I let her because if my little chucks could forgive me for being an inglorious bastard, maybe I could forgive Maman for lying to me in order to protect me, even though it was the truth that ended up setting me free. Maybe I could break the cycle of hate. Maybe I wouldn't have any more misunderstandings that resulted in the unnecessary deaths of people I loved and cared about. Maybe I could live with Judith by my side, with good music and bad exes, and with so much sex she couldn't fucking see straight, making headlines dirty between the sheets.
Jude, I need you to turn my maybe into a definitely. Celian crawled into my bed at the end of that grueling Monday in the office. I didn't kick him out, even though a small vindictive part of me wanted to. Life was too short to deprive yourself of spending time with those you love, something I'd learned the hard way. His body seemed to mold into my small mattress. Somehow, he fit.
If there was one thing I'd realized this year, it's that sometimes we belong in the last place we thought we'd ever be. How can I do that? I put my thriller in my lap and let his arm loop around my waist, dragging me into the crook of his shoulder.